meet the motherboard.
Three lawyer moms.
Eight kids, and that includes two sets of twins.
And a whole lot of opinions.
All right. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to season three of the motherboard. I am your host, Whitney Leigh Green, and I'm joined, as always, by my wonderful co-host, Taylor Ponce and Arthi Subramaniam. Arthi is fresh off of a trip out to Arizona. She is fully awake and engaged and ready to do this episode, right, Arthi?
I'm totally here and 3 hours ago.
So today we're going to talk about a topic that is probably the most near and dear to our hearts here at the motherboard. No, it is not our favorite new product or trash reality television show, although those would both be very good guesses at what is near and dear to our heart. But instead, we're going to talk about what is actually the most near and dear to our heart, which is women helping other women. And we're going to talk about that today with Allison Christian, who I think truly embodies the idea of lifting as you climb and has taken this idea one step further. So not just women helping women, but women leaders helping other women become leaders. Allison was previously a shareholder at a defense firm. She was an AV-rated attorney with a practice involving insurance coverage and insurance litigation matters in both Arizona and New Mexico. Now Allison manages bad faith litigation against Liberty Mutual and its affiliates in the United States. In 2012, she co-founded a business development program to empower women lawyers called Ladder Down. I happen to be a part of the Ladder Down program right now, and I can say that we have only had two sessions, and I've already had so many epiphanies that if literally I slept through the rest of the sessions, it would have been more than worth the time. The program is unique. It runs year-long with monthly sessions dedicated to instruction in the areas of leadership, business development, and mentoring. Allison partnered with the Federation of Defense and Corporate Counsel in 2016 to launch programs in San Francisco, Seattle, and Cleveland, in addition to the longstanding program in Phoenix. And then now there's also a national Ladder Down program, which is the program I happen to be a part of. Allison is active in the local and national defense communities. She's on the Arizona Association of Defense Counsel Board of Directors from 2011 to 2021 and was also past president. She was elected to the FDCC Council's Board of Directors in August of 2021 and is the youngest member ever to serve as a director. And she also served on the DRI Membership Committee from 2014 to 2021. So Allison doesn't do very much, as you guys can tell, and we're going to do our best to fill this show with all the things she doesn't do. So with that said, welcome to the show, Allison.
Oh, goodness. Thank you so much. I am so glad to finally be here and be part of this podcast. I'm excited.
Well, we are so excited to have you. And I have a question I want to start with that someone asked a colleague of mine a couple of weeks ago. And the question is this. So you kind of go through your life, you know, you see these women that you aspire to be, you know, the women that, you know, every time we go to DRI Women in the Law, I feel like there's someone and we are all like, oh my gosh, she's such a badass. Like, those are my life goals, right? But you sort of are that person now. Do you feel like that person inside or do you still feel like you see other women and you think, I can't wait to be you when I grow up?
I love it. I definitely do not see myself as that person. I see myself as someone still looking to the outside and admiring all the women that are accomplishing so much. And I, you know, there's, everybody suffers from imposter syndrome and I'm no exception to that. So when you say all of these wonderful things, I'm still sitting back here kind of blushing, thinking, oh, who is that? You know, it doesn't even feel real that those are things that I've done. And it is when I go to those events, I still fangirl over women who I think have, you know, like Lana Olson and Heidi Goebel and these women who are doing so much and leading, you know, huge organizations and Janice Brown with, I mean, just every time I met Janice, I was like, there's no one cooler than Janice Brown. And it is, that's, I'm grateful. And that was a really sweet introduction. And thank you so much. But no, I still feel like I'm one of the outsiders that has a lot to learn.
It's funny that you say that, Whitney, because as you were reading the intro, that is exactly what I was thinking. Like, you are the person, you know, in front of me on this screen, that it's like, you are that person that seems to have done it all. And I know that that is like also something very dangerous to say. So I don't want you to feel, you know, that type of pressure in a negative way, but just that, like, you actually are walking the walk and not just talking the talk. So my question for you is, were you doing these things intentionally? Like, did you set out with the business plan to say, these are the things that I want to do to develop myself professionally? Or did it just sort of start happening? And then after you saw progress, you looked back and thought, oh, wow, look what I've just sort of created.
I had the intention of making a difference. That was absolutely intentional from early on in my career, because I recognized that I sat in a place of privilege and that I had had a lot of wonderful opportunities in my life to the point where I was. And there were not always women. I had great mentors and people, out, you know, championing my success. And not everybody has that. So when I recognized really quickly that that was something that was lacking in the legal profession, that was intentional. I wanted to make a difference. And what I learned is that you only make a difference when you're in a position of power. And the two sort of went together in parallel tracks. I knew that if I wanted somebody to listen to my goals with respect to Ladder Down and what my thoughts were on how we could really change the legal profession, I needed to be in a place where I had not only a seat at the table, but respect at the table and a platform that I could use to make a difference. It was almost like I had to get to those places. I had to be on the board of the AADC. I had to be the president. I had to get on the board of the FDCC. You know, all of these things had to happen for me to have anybody willing to listen. And so they definitely went together.
Did you start that when you were still at a law firm, or were you already in-house when you started that?
I started Ladder Down when I was a five-year associate at our firm. And I was still in private practice. I'm a recent in-house transition. I went in-house 14 months ago. And I'll start with the disclaimer that I'm here today as Allison Christian, the woman and the lawyer and the mom. And I'm not here as a representative of Liberty Mutual, just so that they know that this is not the EMU talking. This is me. I started it when I was still an associate. I wasn't even yet a partner in private practice when I started Ladder Down, and when I, you know, got on the board for the AADC. I did all of that when I was still in private practice.
So that is fascinating to me that you were able to be as involved as you were as a fifth year associate and to create a program. So tell us, maybe, how did you pitch Ladder Down initially to your firm? Or how did that come about? I'm curious what the reaction was when you, as an associate, so not quite yet in a position of power, maybe, were like, I want to create this leadership program. So tell us about that. Tell us about kind of how it came about and what the reaction was from folks around you when you conceived of it.
It was certainly something that people looked at me like I was crazy when I said, this is something I want to do. And I knew when Beth Fitch and I, my co-founder, when we first started talking about this program and putting it together and putting together what we, if we could imagine a perfect program that would really help women, you know, what would we want to include? And we said, okay, well, you know, now we got to have a business plan for this program, essentially. How is this going to work? How do we fund it? Where does the money come from? So she and I together, you know, had the foresight to put together the plan and the business plan. What do we need to pitch? At the time, I was sitting on the Arizona Association of Defense Counsel's board of directors. I had just joined the board in 2011, so I'd only been on for a year. I wasn't even in, you know, a senior role. And at our yearly retreat for the board, I said, I want to be on the agenda. I have an idea for a program that I'd like to run in Arizona, and I want it to be an AADC program, because I knew we were going to need essentially like a place for the funding to exist. I wasn't going to start a 501c3. Beth wasn't either. We couldn't just keep the money ourselves. And so we needed to be operating under some form of a business entity's umbrella. And the AADC was the perfect place to start. Beth had been a past president. I was sitting on the board. it was, you know, near and dear to both of us that this organization would be the place where Latterdown could have its first home. And I was one of the, I was certainly the youngest person sitting on the AADC board. I was one of only a handful of women at the time. And when I pitched the idea, I was told, "You're nuts. This is not a program. This looks like a program that's been running for 10 years. This isn't a pilot program. And how are we going to do this?" And it was just like being on Shark Tank, essentially, like, what's your idea? What's your plan? Here's the holes. Let's poke in it. And my response to them was essentially, call me crazy if you'd like, but give me a chance and I'm going to prove you wrong. And we pushed it through. And I said, you know, I'm not going to ask you. All I need to know is that if the time comes and I need you to match funding to get this seed, you know, the seed funding, essentially, would you be there to match the funding that I can raise so that I can get to the number that I need to run this program? And they said, sure. You know, what's this girl going to do? And I got not only my funding goal, I surpassed it. I never needed their money at all. So we hit our goal. We were off and running the first program. We had twice as many applicants as we had space to accept. We had, you know, firms lining up at the door to sponsor. It was clear that there was a need for this program. There was a drive to have this in our firms and in our community. And after that, it just took off. The buzz, the program itself was very, very successful. The women loved it. We had incredible testimonials. And then after that, it became easier and easier to push my idea forward. And, you know, Beth and I, when we first started it, we knew we didn't just want it to be in Arizona. We didn't think that it was unique problems to women in Arizona. We wanted it to be everywhere, and immediately started thinking about what are the next steps? How do we get this on a national platform? And that's eventually, you know, we launched it in 2012 with our first program starting in January of 13. And then we got the DRI recognition for the diversity program of the year in 2014. And then it was, you know, DRI was interested, CLM was interested, FDCC was interested. And there was then a decision, you know, what do we do? And we knew that we would take it to a bigger place, which is where it is right now, which is open to anyone, anywhere in the country. And that was our goal. And it's awesome to watch that, you know, play out.
Can you have tell any us sort of business background, or did this, I mean, was that overwhelming from a, like, the business side of things to you, or is that, you know, in your nature?
Oh no, 100% crash course in business. I'm an English major. I can write a poem about how I love this, this business plan. But I'd never had any experience. So there was a lot of side learning. There was, you know, long nights working on weekends, all of that outside time that I had to put into understanding what does this look like? What does funding look like? How do we put together a business plan, and how do we operate this, you know, learning spreadsheets and all of that good jazz, new to me.
The things that I think is commonly sort of a stressor for really anyone, but you were saying that this idea came when you were a fifth year associate, probably right at that stage where you are trying to build your practice and reach partnership. And quite frankly, I think you could say this really about any stage of life, but I think a lot of times people feel so overwhelmed where I know, at least for me as a younger partner with a growing family, it's like, I'm at my capacity in all aspects of my life, right? Professionally, personally, as a friend, as a wife, as a mom, all those things. And so a lot of times, there is this fear of like taking on something else. So even if I would imagine, even if our listeners have really good ideas, it's almost just like so overwhelming to say, like, when am I even going to fit that in? When do I even have mental space to think about it other than in the shower? So I wanted to know, like, did you have like an informal or formal plan for how you were going to fit that into your day? Did you say like, okay, for every day from 7 a.m. to 8 a.m., I'm, you know, designating for time to spend on this? Or what was your strategy for figuring out how to weave in that those extra hours that it demanded, when my guess is you probably felt like you already had a very full schedule?
It was certainly, I had a full schedule and it was a different time and place. I think it everything happens at the time when it's supposed to. I couldn't launch Ladder Down today, I don't think, if I wanted to. I have a different capacity for these types of things right now. But back then I was, I still had that associate mindset. I still had that grinded out mindset. And the, for me, this one meant so much that I was willing to make sacrifices. I built on usually like the start of my day, like that quiet time right before, you know, if I got into the office like 7:30, 8 o'clock, I would take some time to maybe like an hour if I could at the quiet time and just get this done, get a little bit of Ladder Down done. And then at the end of the day, after 5 o'clock, after everybody, you know, build in another hour. So I tried to have a goal of dedicating 2 hours a day in the week at some point to this project. And then I spent hours, you know, on weekends. When we first launched the program, it ran and still does to this day on Saturdays. And I was the one who would go at, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning and go pick up the bagels and get the whole table set up and make sure the space was open and set it all up and do all the tech and the AV and then run it and then clean it up after. I mean, it took 7 hours on a Saturday. And my husband always joked, he was like, is it Ladder Down day again already? Like, it feels like this comes up a lot. Like, it's already been a month. And I'm like, yeah, I got to go spend a whole Saturday doing Ladder Down stuff. And it was, for me, it was, I found that extra time and I found that energy because the passion that I had for it and because how important I felt like it was. And it made my practice feel more meaningful. It actually energized me to have more time, you know, that I just felt like, okay, if I'm going to do this with my day and I'm going to be working on this memo and this motion and this other thing, I've got this that's going to make me feel energized and happy and like I'm making a difference. And I think that's important when you're looking at, especially protecting your emotional energy and the time that you have. You have to think about how you're, if you're not spending it towards something that you really care about, that you're very invested in, you're not going to find that time and you're only going to be drained by it. And I really did care so much that I was energized by it. And I had that, you know, associate mindset.
So I have three questions because I haven't asked any yet. And they're all coming to me at once. Mm-hmm. But building on something you just said, you said that you felt that starting this program helped energize your current practice. Did you find yourself using some of the techniques and some of the mindset that you were trying to impart to other participants? Did you find yourself suddenly applying them more and more into your own practice?
100%. I was a participant in the first Ladder Down program. I not only was running it, I was doing it. I did the homework. I went to the sessions because I wanted to test our product. I wanted to see what are we really getting out of it and how does this work? And also selfishly, I want these skills too. Here I am, a fifth year associate. I, you know, teach me what it's going to take to get to that next level. So I absolutely took very much to heart it and put it into practice what we were learning with respect to business development, developing relationships, building and sustaining contacts, all of that right away. And how to work a room, you know, how to present, all of that stuff. It was, I started using it right away.
So you also mentioned that, you know, you felt that you needed to be on a specific level before you could do something like this. But you've also said you were a fifth year associate, which was still pretty young. And it's amazing that you held so many positions in different various organizations at that point in time. But I was curious about one thing you said. You said you felt that you needed to have that advantage in order to, I guess, extend that ladder down. I found myself wondering if guys think that way. If guys feel like they have to already have achieved something in order to create opportunities for other people, or if they, you know, it seems to me that you've adopted the lift as you climb method. You know, I know you said you felt like you needed to reach a certain echelon, but given the fact that you were so young when you did it, it feels to me that you were still climbing yourself, and yet you were lifting others along with you. Is that how it felt to you?
It did feel that way. And it felt, it was one thing to launch the program, and it was one thing to get it off the, you know, off the ground, have it start running in Arizona. And I knew it was going to be a totally different thing to sustain it and to make sustained changes, not just changes for the 24 women in that class, but changes beyond that. And that's where knowing that even though I pushed so hard and to get the program put together and out the door, I wanted to be one of those leaders making the decisions about future programs in order to make a broader change. And it was when I, you know, I knew the second I joined the AADC, I knew I wanted to be president someday. And same with the FDCC. I told these guys, I said, you know, I don't join to not, I was president of the YLD. I was president of the Phi Beta Kappa. I don't join to not become the leader. And I do that because once I got to the secretary treasurer level, I was able to pick my successor on the board and influence the successors who came after me. And the AADC, for the first time in its history, after watching, you know, or after having my presidency, we had an executive committee where three out of the four of them were women. And that was my planning coming into action. And that was what I had wanted to see, was to see more women up in those places of power. And I'm doing the same thing on the FDCC board. I'm really advocating for diverse attorneys and for women attorneys to have that voice and that power. Because I think, you know, your other question, do men think this way? Do men think they need to be in a position of power to influence? I think they believe they are the power because they have been. So they don't see that as something they have to achieve. And I think for each of us, it's more something that, you know, for women and for diverse attorneys, it's an aspiration.
We have to prove it.
Yeah. And so the power isn't as inherent. And to get to that table where those people who've had the power for so long and who have influenced the decision for so long will see you and listen to you and hear you, we have to work a little harder to get there. But you have to be there to make these changes. And even when you're there, trust me, it's still hard. I mean, I had fights along the way. I certainly had to stand my ground a bunch of times with people who were not, you know, hey, this little cute program was nice for a year or two, but I think we're done. And you have to then be in that space where you can get others to listen to what you have to say, because they'll make decisions without you if you're not there.
I'm sure that we have some listeners who are fascinated and riveted by what we've all been talking about, specifically what you've been telling them with respect to the leadership opportunities and skills that it teaches. Do you mind giving us a really quick nutshell of what Ladder Down does? Like, I get that it's monthly and I get mm-hmm. that it's a program, but without giving away any of your trade secrets, right. Can you just, like, if we have a listener that wants to sign up for this, what should they be looking for?
I will tell you what Ladder Down is. It has become a program that helps women define and achieve success for themselves. It gives you tools to identify your leadership strengths and weaknesses, to develop the skills to improve interpersonal relationships that will lead to business, if that's what you want, but more importantly, just how to influence people. And it also teaches you how to take what you have learned and help other women by paying it forward. And so to me, it started as a place where it was geared toward women in private practice developing a book of business. That's still a huge component of what we do. But it's not the only thing. And some of my favorite Ladder Down stories aren't the women who have gone on to become an equity partner. They're the women who have looked around at what they're doing with their time and said, I'd rather be doing something different. How do I develop skills to network to get the job I want, not the job that I have? Because I think I'd be more happy. And that, to me, that happiness would be success, even if it's not necessarily monetary.
Almost like executive life coaching for yourself.
Yeah. And it is, you know, and I'm sure Whitney will attest to this, you know, in those first couple of sessions, what you learn in terms of your emotional intelligence and your approach to conflict resolution, those are invaluable and they're transferable skills. It doesn't just mean, you know, here's how I will use this to get a new client. It's here's how I can influence the decision makers at my firm or at my company. Here's how I can utilize the team around me. Here's how I can operate from a place where I collaborate really well when I see conflict, and recognizing where my, you know, how I handle it. That EQ is so important no matter where you are. And those skills are things that we teach in Letter Down. And for someone who's interested in gaining those skills, the window is, you know, is pretty limited now. We run the program in Cleveland. And Kelly Barnett and her team out there are some of my favorite women. I love what they've done in Cleveland. And if you're in the Cleveland area, you can do that program. The national program is open and runs from late February, early March of every year to the fall for a calendar year. And we start taking applications in late December, early January. So if someone is interested, they can go to the ladderdown.org website, find more info. And then, you know, toward the fall, if they're wanting to apply and be part of next year's program, to reach out.
Do you see me writing that address down?
Ladderdown.org.
I can say, as someone who's in sort of still the beginning of the program, that so far we have been focusing on sort of EQ, we do the Myers-Briggs personality testing, and then the TKI conflict, and then, you know, discussion around that. And I feel like so for me, generally, the sort of business developing clients, I've been fortunate to have some really good mentors. I feel like that comes fairly naturally for you. That, and I can certainly always get better and learn more. And I'm excited to learn those skills. But learning more about myself to understand how to be a better leader has been huge, because no matter, I mean, you can get clients till the cows come home. If you don't have folks who will work for you, especially in the kind of work that we do, where like I couldn't physically do all of my work by myself. And so if I can't build a team and grow that team, you're always going to be limited on how much business you can do, because you're going to be limited by yourself, which is going to be pretty small. And so what I'm learning about how to be a better leader, and I actually will say, I thought all of that was going to come very naturally to me. I care about people. I want them to grow. I want to help them. And I just felt like, well, you care about people and you want them to grow and you're not a jerk. And like, how hard can it be? But it's so much harder because everyone's different. So like what motivated me is not always what motivates all of my associates. And I mean, even talking through some of the Myers-Briggs stuff, that Lynn's description of a P, so a perceiving person, like versus a judging person, literally just hearing the description of how that person approaches the world irritated me. Like I was immediately like, no, we're not doing that. I can't handle that, because I'm so far on the like J side. And so just reframing things as different, you know, it's not right or wrong to approach a problem a certain way. It's just different. And how can we kind of work together? I mean, that maybe it shouldn't have been like a revelation to me, but it really was the course of those classes.
What you've said is so on point, that it is one thing to have a book of business by yourself, but you can't grow that book. You can't work that book unless you're capable of maintaining a team, because it's only going to be as profitable as the people who can work it. And if you're limited to just yourself, that's always going to have a ceiling. Especially in our lives. I mean, where we've got so many other, you know, as women and mothers and all these things, there's so many things pulling us in different directions. If you can't energize and utilize a team around you, you're going to be limited in what you can achieve. And I remember when I learned the, you know, all the Myers-Briggs and the TKI, I'm just like you, I'm off the charts J. But I also learned, and Lynn coached me through all of that, is that, because Beth Fitch is a P. So the two of us, we had a lot of friction in that regard, and we learned together, you know, how I could loosen up a little bit. And it made me a better leader when I recognized there's other ways to do things and there's other ways that, you know, that people operate. And to recognize that the team was strongest when I had a variety of, you know, people who processed out loud versus people who had to take a minute and go back and think about it, and people who focused on details really well, and people who focused on the bigger picture. That diversity in types really made a stronger team, and it changed how I managed the firm when I was in private practice, because I knew how valuable those different perspectives were. So rather than hire, you know, have like-minded people all the time, it was bring in a team of people who will approach problems differently, and you're going to get a better result.
interesting you mentioned that, because I have heard recently of a lot of companies putting forward personality tests in their part of their application process to find somebody who they believe will work with their team or complement their team. It was a little off-putting to me at first when I heard that, you know, that's what people do now. But it's not so much that they're weeding out certain personality types as they're searching for the person that will be that missing piece in their team.
To complement.
To complement, yeah.
What do you think that is one of the biggest problems facing women in leadership, or just women in law in general, from a mentorship standpoint? What do you think is missing from mentorship right now?
I think the biggest gap is in women who are already there, who are the leaders, wanting to help women who are coming up behind them, who may have different ways of doing things. I think that there are more allies and more champions sometimes out there in the men. And I think that there is an opportunity for women to be available and be open to the changing world, how everything is different. It's definitely different than how people practiced in the 80s and 90s. We're different than how we practiced in 2019. It is an evolving world. And the competition and what we have to do to, you know, succeed, all of that is so intense. And it, to me, I think that we would really benefit from having more women who are open to finding alternative ways to be successful in this career, and not just be, you know, kind of resentful or a little bit upset that this is how I had to do it and you should be able to do it. And, you know, I had to do this and this and you should do it too. And I think that the women are harder on each other than the men, especially men with daughters. I feel like men with daughters are out there just waving the flag for us, which is awesome. But the women are tough. And that makes me so sad. I mean, I wish that we could all be bigger supporters for each other and recognize that we're each in our own space and doing the best we can. So I think that's the,
it's not a zero sum game.
Yeah. And it's certainly not linear, and it's not as though, we can do everything. Even though we like to, I've actually got a picture that one of my friends sent me the other day that's of a superwoman. And he said, "I just want you to remember that you are a superwoman." And because you don't feel that all the time. And that was a man sending me that card. But you, to have women that would say, "I remember, and I've been there, and I'm here in your corner, and I want to help you through it," that would be amazing.
It always makes me so sad to hear stories like that of women not championing other women. I've been fortunate enough to have the exact opposite experience, just some really strong women mentors and peers, and also very strong male mentors and peers too. But I really hate to hear that. And it feels like, you know, we're on the same team. And, you know, if that's not the barrier we need to be breaking down, right? And so I just really hate to hear that, and hope that that's happening less and less. And I think by training women and pointing mm-hmm. these things out, it's like the next generation will hopefully not face that as much. It's sort of one of the reasons why I've always found a little bit of irony in all this training that we do, when it feels like, well, we agree with everything. We know this. Shouldn't we be training everybody else around us?
Yeah, the echo chamber.
I've definitely seen some pushback on, you know, women's kind of executive leadership coaching for that reason, that you're sort of asking women to do one more thing on top of the other extra things we already have to do to get to leadership roles. And you're asking them to do more work, but pitching that to them as a perk. And shouldn't we be actually just like telling the men they work with to give them a chance and to treat them fairly? And I get that. I mean, I do. I understand that intellectually, but I would just say that I feel like I have gotten so much personally, whether it be from DRI Women in the Law or in Ladder Down, now that I'm in that program, from kind of growing who I am. And yes, the idea is that that's going to lead to career advancement, right? That is why I'm doing it. But that's not all it is either. Some of it is about making me a better leader so that I can be more useful to my team. Because I do, just like you, Allison, I care probably as much as I care about anything about making life easier for the women who are coming after me and, you know, making them have less questions about their ability to do something or be something, let them have. I already feel like some of the women who work for me have so much less of that imposter syndrome than I did coming up, that they are a lot more self-assured than I was coming up. And so I hope maybe some of that is that they have women examples in front of them who are doing it and thriving. And so I think that, you know, I get that, but I do think it's worthwhile. And it's not just something else to add to our list of things to do. Maybe we could do both. We should maybe have a male counterpart to these leadership courses we're doing.
I was just thinking that, like, it sounds like the men need to be part of this program. It really does. Because
We've had guys ask to be part of it, but not for the reason of, I want to learn how I can be a better ally. It was, this sounds like business development. Count me in. So, but no, I think that it is as important to have exactly those conversations with the people who need to hear it. And so that it doesn't just become added work for the women who are saying, I don't need to just be doing added work and I don't need to just be added to the diversity committee and just be handling this. I've only got so much time. I want to be sure that I'm spending it in all the right places.
I've heard some of those conversations already at our sessions of people who are sort of like, wait a minute, everyone's not miserable where they work. So, you know, everybody doesn't wish they were doing something else, or some of you have firms who support you. I mean, there have been some of those kind of thoughts of like, man, maybe there is something else. Cause I feel like firms are sort of inherently wired to tell you that, like, it's definitely going to be worse. If you go anywhere else, it's definitely going to be worse than it is here. And so you should just stick with the devil, you know. And I feel like Ladder Down is sort of an opportunity to talk to people and say, you know, well, does what you're doing sound like a better fit for me than what I'm doing right now?
100%. And the statistics that we've seen now over the last 10 years, just sort of play, it happens every year. There's like a 70%, between 70 and 80% turnover between the women who, you know, where they start and where they end up at the end of the program, in terms of leaving their firm, going to a different firm, going into, you know, in-house, going to government work. People move and make those transitions. And I think it's those conversations about, wait, you're happy? Wait, you have support? Wait, you have this? And it is that conversation and, oh, you're making this? Wow, I'm wildly underpaid. So there are those open dialogues and conversations, I think, are really important. And it is part of what, you know, I always look at it as the firms, if the women go back to the firm and say, this is, you know, this is my issue, this is what I don't like, this is what I'd like to see change, and they're met with reception, we would like to change, you know, that thank you for bringing this conversation to light. We now see these deficiencies. Let's work with you to make it better. I think that that's an opportunity. But if the firm's like, ooh, see, we didn't ever plan to make you partner. Sorry that you had to bring this up. You know, I get it that they've got to move and figure out what's going to work for them. And I think having those small group conversations is a place of empowerment to feel like now I have the information and knowledge and I can move if I need to.
I think those discussions are also ways to get an idea out in the open. My guess is that a lot of those people have probably had the internal conversations quite frequently, but had probably never voiced it, maybe with, you know, a spouse or a friend that's not in the industry, but probably never had it, never verbalized it with someone that could actually offer sound advice. So just like any other issue that one might have in their life, the more you voice it, talk about it, you hear other ideas. Sometimes we just need to hear ourselves say it out loud to kind of develop how we feel. And it's kind of just telling the universe, I'm open to opportunities, you know?
Exactly. And they were, I mean, it was part of what I when I made the decision to go in-house. I mean, I used a lot of the sounding boards that I'd had in Ladder Down, and the process and, you know, looking at where I was and what my goals were and how happy could I be. And I put all of those, the skills to use myself and, you know, found what I'm going to be an emu for life. This is a dream gig. I did, like you just said, Whitney, like, you know, people have conversations. I didn't know you could be this happy. I didn't know it could be this good. And I am so grateful that I, you know, had the, and a lot of people will say to me, you're so brave. you were a majority shareholder at a private practice firm and wow. And I never thought of it as brave or having courage. I just thought of it as I need to, you know, this is what I have to do for my, this is like survival. I have to find a way to live a life that I feel, walks the values that I want to be walking and really does it. And I could not be happier. And I just am like, well, it happened at the right time. Not like I would have done it sooner or anything like that, but it was all of those skills coming together to find what worked for me and being happy.
And I think more people need to hear you say that loudly, that you're happy in what you're doing and that you did find that. Because I remember a wise person in my family telling me, you know, when I said my very first job, I'm like, but what if it's not my dream job? And he said, then that's okay. He said, you've got to do this for a while to figure out what your dream is and to have it, you know, crystallize in front of you. But once it does, it sounds like you both had and sought the skills necessary to push yourself to that next level, break out of the comfort zone and seek the growth that you needed to be as happy as you are now.
Yep. And that was, I would, you know, one of the conversations that I've had a lot since I went in-house is that I think it's important for women to have the conversation out loud as to why they're doing it with themselves. And to make sure that those people are, a lot of people would look at me and they said, oh, you're taking a step back. You're going to go in house. And, oh, is it just too hard? And it was like, I'm putting my happiness first and I'm using the skills that I like to use and putting those skills forward and pushing my comfort zone to learn what it is that I love to do on a broader scale with a bigger company. I don't think that's a step back. And here's kind of how I viewed it and having that dialogue with them about where I am now and what I'm doing and how it's different than what I was doing before and how it is an absolute stretch for my skill set, an absolute growth opportunity. And it is really awesome. I love
with
it.
The risk of you sounding too much like an absolute, like just perfectionist and so good at what you do, tell us now, what were some of your fears in leaving? Like what stressed you out?
Oh God. So, well,
because you are just like, I'm fangirling over you.
I'll be super honest. I was very afraid that I was no good at what I do. You have that fear, you have that comfort that, you know, I've done this in this state within, you know, Arizona, New Mexico, I've done this specific thing with these specific people. I've been at the same firm my whole career. I was so comfortable and it was awesome. And I had control over my day-to-day life and I had a huge book of business and I loved the people that I worked with. And it was sort of like, are you out of your mind? But I wanted to grow and I wasn't growing. I was very happy in that spot, but I wasn't growing. I wasn't pushing. And I was afraid that I wasn't going to be able to do it outside of that context, that I wasn't going to succeed in the corporate world, that I wasn't going to be able to succeed, you know, to handle other jurisdictions. And I'm the breadwinner in my family. And that's a huge pressure for me to think I am leaving the comfort of this private practice ownership role to go do something for myself. And I still have to succeed because we all have to stay, you know, insured and
all of that.
We've got to eat. Yeah. And so it was a big stretch for me. And so I was afraid that I wasn't going to be able to translate my skills that I had cultivated in Arizona onto a broader scale. That made me afraid. And it was, I saw something that said in Facebook, you know, it's like they read your mind. You like think of a popsicle and then that brand pops up, but this thing came across my Facebook feed right as the time as I was transitioning. And it says, you know, anytime you're about to make a step in a new direction, fear is going to be the first feeling that meets you. Greet it and keep walking. And I thought, okay, I'm going to greet this fear and I'm going to keep going forward because this is what I need to do. I just feel in my heart, this is what I need to do. And it was intimidating, but it was, I crushed it.
Well, I can see that you have a Peloton in the background, Allison. And what you just said makes me think of one of my favorite. I'm a big Robin Arzón fan. She is my favorite. I feel like every time I ride with her, there is like a truth bomb that changes my day from her. But she said on a workout the other day, and I literally wrote this on like a post-it note and like stuck it on my mirror. And it said, confidence. She said, confidence is the byproduct of hustle. And so like, if you're not confident yet, you just work at like, A, like work harder and you'll get your confidence, but also like know that you should be confident because you're working hard. Like those two things work in tandem together. And I feel like that goes right along with what you were just saying, like with the greet the fear and you keep walking, like you just keep working and you'll get there.
Yep. You keep going. And I, the Peloton is like not only my physical outlet, it's like my emotional support animal. And I love riding with Allie Love. She's, I mean, her messages to me, I just feel like I get so much out of that, but it's the same thing. It's like, you know, you didn't come this far to quit and you've just got, you know, you, that was really tough, but did you die? No. Okay, cool. And you've survived every worst day you've had so far. You've survived it. And those kind of messages, they do come through. And, you know, I love that physical outlet, but I love the empowerment from, you know, those types of messages, because you do need to have that in your head as you're moving through your career and in all of these decision trees, because your head's this crazy place where the doubt creeps in. And if you don't have either from outdoor, you know, outside mentors or something like, you know, a coach or a trainer, therapist, all of the above, those messages that you can do this, it's scary, keep going. So what if you fail? You know, that's important to hear. I love that. I love that little bike.
Not enough of us have folks like that in our life to say that.
Yeah.
But we're all quiet right now because we're all like just taking it in.
Yeah. I've just been listening. Well, are we wrapping?
We could. Yeah, I was going to say, I think we could probably keep talking for 3 more hours.
Awesome. I love that idea.
But so. We, in the interest of your respecting your time, Allison, we will wrap. So, and I didn't tell you about this in advance. So, but I think you've listened to the show before. So hopefully you knew that it was coming, that we end every episode with something that we're loving or hating this week. And since I didn't give you advance warning, I will not make you go first. Instead, I will make Arthi go first. Arthi, are you loving or hating this week?
I'm loving that I got to spend the weekend in Arizona, and it was a new experience for me. I had never been there before. I had a fabulous time meeting with our client, but I was able to kind of check it out a little bit, see what's going on. I learned from my Uber driver that Stevie Nicks lives there, which was super cool, and Alice Cooper, and it just made me feel like I could run into them in Crate and Barrel or something, and I was kind of hoping for it. So it was nice. I had 48 hours without my children, which was actually very, very good for them as well as for me. I think I came back to children that are just a modicum more independent than they were 48 hours ago. Plus, I had a very wonderful time with my work colleagues. So it was fabulous. I was glad to be there. Happy to be home. Look forward to doing something like this again.
Hit me up,
TSP, you're up.
So this whole episode, I've been like trying to focus, but also in the back of my mind, be like, what is my thing going to be? Because I had not prepared one. So I was like rummaging through my purse a second ago. I'm like, what's in here that I can use? And sunscreen. I know this is probably not new to many of our listeners because it is so awesome and it's been around for a while. But I love the Supergoop Unseen sunscreen, which is the one that's kind of dry. My kids now ask for it because they hate getting sunscreen put on them. So they say, can we have the dry one? We have the dry one.
Is it the powder?
Cheap. No, it's liquid, but it dries dry. So you don't, it doesn't leave you with that like greasy, oily feel. And I actually had it, I put it on this morning like, under my makeup. So it's the unseen sunscreen. I am obsessed with it. Super good.
All right, Allison.
I am loving Costco salmon fillets. This is where I'm at. But I love that they will, it's healthy. I can put together a dinner that cooks in the oven in like 25 minutes and it tastes amazing. And I put this little, Ina Garten soy sauce thing mix on it and it is so good. Costco frozen broccoli in the microwave for 5 minutes with the Costco salmons, healthy dinner, like 30 minutes, easy cleanup. I'm loving it.
Sounds great.
I love anything Costco, so that's well done.
They're very good. All right,
Whitney, bring it home.
So I think what I also struggled a little bit to come up with one, but I think I will say that the weather here is starting to finally get warmer and it's staying light later. And so I've been able to start running again. I unfortunately have not been able to convince my husband that I need the tread in addition to the bike. And so my running is limited to when I can actually run outside. And I quite frankly am not dedicated enough to run when it's freezing. And so the weather's getting warm. I've been able to run. I feel like I'm kind of hitting my stride, pun intended, with running, and I can actually like run and jog the whole workout now without having to like walk in the middle. And so it's just really nice to get that like 20 or 30 minutes to zone out and just to think about how not to die while I'm doing the workout and leave all of my work and child worries behind.
Right. Favorite jam when you're running? Do you have like a tune that like gets you motivated?
So I usually do the Peloton like run workouts that have a playlist, but there is a song. I think it's like DJ Skrillex. It's literally called Run It. And it is just like a very aggressive song. It's probably about something I absolutely couldn't relate to in real life. But in my mind, it's just like run, like just don't stop doing what you're doing.
Love it.
All right. Well, thank you guys. Thank you so much, Allison, for taking the time to be here with us today. I feel like we all learned a lot. Come back anytime you want to spend more time with us.
Awesome. This was amazing, ladies. Thank you so much for including me and sharing time with me as well.
Thank you for sharing it all.
You really spoke to me today. I at least feel. I know you're going to speak to a lot of the audience, so I know they will all appreciate it too. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Motherboard.
Thank you for listening to the Motherboard.
Thank you for listening to the Motherboard.